Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 109 of Geek Town Radio. This week I have with me Bex.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Excellent. Enjoying the sunshine. It is phenomenal. I almost want to go outside.
I know. Face you guilty about being inside doing things when the weather's like this. It was like 22 degrees up here yesterday. It's ridiculous. So what have you been up to the last few weeks?
Apart from desperately trying to not make even more videos on YouTube about Ghost in the Shell.
Yes.
I think I've already made 3. I might make another one.
So what did you
think? They're a little bit ranty.
Right. Okay, so what did you think of Ghost in the Shell?
In a single line.
Go on.
Absolutely horrible, generic, by-the-numbers action thriller with very pretty graphics laid on top.
Oh dear. So they somewhat dropped the ball on it, you're saying?
I don't think they had a ball. I think they weren't even in the realm of that particular metaphor. It was such a shame because visually there was some incredible work that was going on.
Yeah.
The people that were doing the costuming, the effects, the makeup, the styling and things like that. Just amazing amounts of effort and wonderful work. However, it's all draped around this horrible, generic, poorly put together, predictable framework.
Oh dear.
And it wasn't very 3D. I saw it in 3D IMAX and there was only about 3 scenes that really fully utilized any 3D. I expected it to be more because so much of it is CGI. It was an opportunity to do some incredible 3D work, and
yeah,
they didn't really. It seems designed to just be seen in 2D.
Yeah, I wonder if it was retrofitted 3D.
Yeah,
maybe.
I think there was one instance where they randomly threw something at the camera for no reason, and that was about it, really. but it's one of those films that's weird because it's only really worth seeing on the big screen because the visuals are that pretty and that expansive. Not going to really work on a tiny television.
No.
But at the same time, I don't want to give them my money.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
I'm sort of the whole 3D thing, I'm kind of over at this point. I half the time I avoid going to 3D screenings unless it's something that I really think will work. But yeah, it's very disappointing.
Could work. It's one of those things that really could work, but something would have to pretty much be film to only be seen in 3D because you lay out your shots very differently, you would direct it very differently, the
yeah.
way the camera would pan and move, the way you set up your foreground and background, what is in focus or not. That's done very differently if you want to do it well in 3D, but everyone is trying to just do a hybrid where it will be kind of okay in 3D or 2D, and that means that no one really gets a very good deal.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, the retrofitted 3D stuff I really dislike, and the stuff that's, I mean, there have been a few things that have been shot well in 3D. I think Avatar worked very well in 3D. I think the Hobbit movies were very interesting in 3D as well because they'd be designed to be shot like that. But when they kind of retrofit it, or I remember watching Captain America the First Avenger in 3D and I thought it was awful and worked so much better as a 2D movie. So, you know.
Yeah.
It's,
well, you know that it shouldn't be shown in 3D if it only costs you an extra £3 and you feel robbed.
Yes, that's a good point.
You're sitting there going, I could have had an expensive overpriced packet of crisps.
Yeah.
That would have been worth it more than the slight 3D-ness and the slight awkwardness of having glasses or glasses over glasses in some people's cases.
Yes, yeah. No,
and I think Ghost in the Shell very much was one of those. If you want to see the beautiful visuals, watch it in 2D because you also get kind of better colour saturation.
Yes.
And enjoy it for that, but do not expect a single line of well-written dialogue.
Oh dear. Oh, well, not one I will be going to see, I don't think.
Well, I went to see it. I wanted to give it a chance. And because I knew I was probably going to be very, very angry, I thought that I should go and see it the day it came out. So I was completely justified and could say objectively that it was rubbish.
Awesome. So anything else you've been doing?
End of Legion's amazing.
Yes. We haven't spoken since that finished. I thought they did a fantastic job with that whole series. I thought
I
the end was really
another
good.
Series already.
Yes. Well, you are getting another series. You're just going to have to wait for it. So
yeah, I'm not sure I can. It is seriously the best thing on television. Yeah. Absolutely amazing. Enjoyed that. Flash, I'm a bit sort of on Flash at the moment. The end of the last episode with their kind of mid-season break, that looks like it could be fun, although I feel they're retreading old ground. But I didn't like the musical episode. I was really looking forward to that.
Yes, I don't think we've really spoken about the musical episode. I was looking forward to it, and I don't think it was as well put together as it really could have been.
I think the premise was poor. Because the fun is seeing the characters you know and love singing, but by making it so it wasn't those characters,
yeah,
that kind of took away the novelty value, and then they just did covers. And I think why although I'm not a massive fan of it, the Buffy singing episode that's sort of very famous for making this a thing.
Yes.
They wrote the songs, they were personal to the characters, and they managed to maintain that kind of novelty value and tell story through their singing episode, whereas this one was very, very much a filler episode.
Yeah, I'm sort of with you there. I think Once More With Feeling, which is the Buffy episode, I mean, I am quite a fan of that episode because I think it works really well. I think the songs are really good. And importantly, it drops some major plot points and pushes things forward. Whereas this, the thing that this resolves at the end is that you've got Kara getting back with a boyfriend and you've got Barry getting back with Iris. But that just is kind of resolving something which they kind of artificially set up in the first place. The whole breakup thing, I don't think was particularly convincing in the first place. So that always felt a bit forced. And then you got this episode, which sort of shows the reason why they forced those breakups, if you see what I mean. So
yeah, they didn't have the kind of magnitude and weight that you'd expect with something like that. It was a little bit like when you see commercials for sofas on the telly and they're half price, but you know they've never been full price.
Yeah.
You're supposed to feel excited that the sofas are half price, but somehow you know that was inevitable and going to happen all along.
Yeah.
And it was a bit like that. It just, there wasn't any weight or real emotion behind these points that should have been, you know, someone proposing to someone should be so big and important. And even if it is, you know it's going to happen. We know what characters are going to get together, but it should still have an emotional resonance. And it really didn't because, yeah, they'd been broken up like a week.
Yeah. And I didn't quite buy the whole reason for them breaking up in the first place. So, and it was the same with Supergirl as well. I didn't buy that as, you know, I thought that was a bit weird the way that they did that in both cases. And,
I haven't been watching Supergirl, and they didn't give him enough build up in The Flash that if you weren't watching Supergirl, you had any clue who he even was.
Right. Okay.
It was just a dude, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, that doesn't help either. I mean, it was fun, but yeah, very filler, that episode, unfortunately. Yeah,
they needed to write their own songs for it. I think that would have helped. And having the real world go into song is far more exciting than having an imaginary world where people that just look like the characters start singing.
Yeah, and I always thought that, I mean, because Neil Patrick Harris voiced Music Meister in the cartoon version, I think that's where the character originated. And I think it's such a shame that they couldn't get him to do this, because I think he would have added a little extra layer to it as well. But
he's incredibly charismatic and he does comedy very, very well, especially quirky comedy.
Yeah.
He would have been good. But Music Meister have a huge amount of screen time. He just came across as slightly annoying and pointless.
Yes, I know what you mean. Yeah.
It would have been much nicer to see Cisco singing about science, and he could have had a whole Killer Frost aside that was a bit Frozen-like.
Yeah.
There was a lot of opportunity to do some really fun character pieces in there.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It was okay, but it was filler and slightly disappointing, that episode. So, yes, if they do it again, I hope they take all that on board and work at it a bit more. It will be good. Maybe you could rope Joss into doing one.
That would be pretty cool. If we had Neil Patrick Harris and Joss Whedon, and if there's any chance of getting any other Firefly alumni into that as well, that would be cool.
That would be good. Well, you know, he is, if the rumours are all true, he is back at DC doing Batgirl movie. So, you know, maybe you could rope him across to do a TV episode.
Much as I'm not a massive fan of the sort of New 52 Batgirl comics, I do think that if anyone can make it into a good cinematic piece, then it would be Joss Whedon. He's exactly the right person to be doing that.
Yeah, definitely. So any other stuff this week?
I think that's been mostly it. Ranting about Ghost in the Shell has taken up quite a lot of my time.
Well, I've been finishing off Mass Effect Andromeda, which I have now finished after 100 hours.
Oh, good going.
So, 100 hours of gameplay there or thereabouts anyway. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, I think I got a 96% completion so far. So technically, I suppose I've not entirely finished. There are a few quests missions that I jumped over. One of which was a couple of them that I've missed were because they were bugged and they were minor side missions. So I didn't worry too much about them. One of those got fixed, but by the time it was fixed, I kind of finished the main story and I couldn't be bothered to go back and do it. The other one is still bugged even now, even after the first patch. So that's slightly annoying, but they have improved quite a lot of bits and pieces with that first patch as well. So that's quite good. I find a way of changing the colours of the clothes, which I'd struggled with as well, which I thought originally was a bug, but it's badly labelled how you're actually supposed to do it. But overall, I thought the story was good fun. I think that it's well put together. I think a lot of people are finding it's taking sort of 10 hours or so, 10, 15 hours for them to really get into it. I didn't have that at all. I really enjoyed it pretty much from the start, you know, but I love those sort of big open world, wander around, do what you want sort of games. I'm a huge fan of those BioWare games, so I was always kind of predisposed to liking this, and there was nothing in it that was game-breakingly bad that would put me off it. So the characterizations compared to the other Mass Effect games, I think are good and solid. There's always a few people on your team that you really don't get on with, and you always have favorites. And I think that's the same case here as well. There are certain people that I always took on missions which I wouldn't do before, but overall, I definitely a thumbs up from me. Well worth going out to get, I think. I take it you've not played yet.
No, I am quite behind on the gaming. I'm still playing Lollipop Chainsaw, man.
Yeah. Interesting.
I don't have as much time for gaming as I used to.
Yes.
And I tend to play slightly more throwaway things or things that are beat-em-ups, co-ops, and things I can do in a social situation, rather than playing the RPGs, because I tend to play JRPGs that are exceedingly long and complicated and entirely take over your life for months.
Yes, yeah, I know the sort of ones you mean. There was a couple
Save them up for winter.
yes, they're good winter games, those. A couple of little other games that I picked up. There's one called Beat Cop, which is a sort of 8-bit pixel kind of designed to be a bit as though the story's based around the idea that you're a police detective that's been busted down to being a police cop. And you have a beat, which is like a street, and it's all done in sort of 8-pixel kind of art. And you're trying to solve the case that busted you down wrongly to being a beat cop. And on top of that, you're also doing your regular kind of day-to-day police duties up and down this particular street, so you're dealing with shop owners and that sort of stuff. That's quite good fun. It's a sort of love letter to those 80s kind of TV cop dramas is the way it's described, but that's really good fun and a good little throwaway thing where, you know, each day takes sort of 20 minutes or so to play through. So that's quite good. And I also picked up a game called Thimbleweed Park, which is a classic Monkey Island style made on the Scum Engine point and click adventure game. It's actually made by the same guys that made Monkey Island as well. So it's got a really strong pedigree behind it. It sends itself up quite a lot. They're kind of digging at all those adventure game tropes and stuff. So it's that's really good fun. You're playing a sort of pair of FBI agents who look suspiciously like Mulder and Scully, and you're trying to solve a murder. But it's only about, I think it's £14 or £12 or something. That's well worth picking up because that's great fun. So particularly if you like those old school point and click adventure games, it's really good fun. So that was the stuff that I've been gaming on. The big thing that I got to do last week was go to the premiere for American Gods.
Yes, I saw that. I looked on with envious eyes.
Yes, well, I managed to get down to London and they did it at a place called Marylebone One, which is actually a converted church, apparently. And you can tell once you get into the main kind of hall area, it's a converted church because it's still got the full organ in the background. They sort of set that up with a tiny red carpet sort of down one side in the entrance area, and they'd done the rest of it out like a creepy wood. So you had to go through this like creepy little wood, and then there was the main hall at the back, which had been set up as a screening room, complete with pews, you know, because American Gods, it's church pews. So they set all that up, and we got to watch the first episode, which I can't say anything about because it's under embargo until the 17th.
Is it good? Are you allowed to just vaguely say?
I would vaguely say yes. I will say yes.
Worth checking out.
Yes.
I mean, the trailer looks really good. Everything I've seen and read about it so far looks really good. So I'm pretty excited, and it doesn't look like they're shying away from the material. And it looks like they're putting effort into making something which is going to be, at least in the spirit of it, not like the kind of Lucifer adaptation, which, although fun in its own right, is not an adaptation of Lucifer. So I'm excited for it, even if you can't say anything.
Yes, I would say you are correct in that assumption.
You could be in politics.
But yes, so I won't say any more about that. The premiere itself was quite good fun. What I did manage to put up, and what we were allowed to put up, was the Q&A section from the end of the premiere. That is up on the website. I took a video of that, so you can see it was four people. It was Ricky Whittle, who plays Shadow Moon, the lead guy. Ian McShane as well was up there. And sorry, it was five people, actually. Emily Browning, who plays Laura Moon. Bruce Langley, who plays Technical Boy. And Yetild Badaki, I think her name is, who plays Bilquis. So yeah, it was those five up there. That was really good fun. Got to have a big Q&A with those, with Alex Zane hosting it, because it's some sort of London bylaw that you can't do any form of premiere without Alex Zane hosting it. There was all of that. And then after that, they converted the upstairs into Jack's Crocodile Bar, which is the infamous kind of bar where Shadow first meets Mr. Wednesday. They actually converted a full-blown had a full-blown crocodile kind of bar canopy over the top of the awesome. Of the main bar. It was really good. We got photos of that up on the website as well. Ended up having a chat with Jamie East and somebody else called Matt, who I discovered afterwards was the stand-up comic and DJ Matt Richardson. So I ended up chatting with them for a bit and before I headed back out. But I had a very pleasant time and it was very good. As I say, I can't say anymore. I'm very nervous about saying anything about the actual episode. But yes, it's going to be worth waiting for. I will say that. So
yeah, we'll have to do a proper talk about it when you are allowed.
Yes. 17th, I think the embargo is lifted on the first episode. So expect reviews all over the place on the 17th. Other than that, there's a few other things that came back. You've got Bones finished forever this week over here, which, I don't know, I think it had probably run its course, that show. Much as I like David Boreanaz and I enjoy watching that show, I think it had got to the point where they must have killed people in every possible human way you could at this point. So I think that was probably good it came to an end. And it wrapped things up nicely, I thought. Although it did feel a bit like you could bring it back for another episode if you really wanted to, because it wasn't like they all, you know, they killed anybody off or anybody went in a, you know, went off to do something else entirely. It did feel like you could continue that quite happily if you really wanted to. And the 100 returned this week as well. I take it you've not caught up with that yet.
I'm not. I got slightly disappointed when it went from Cool Things in Space to Lord of the Flies very, very quickly and sort of didn't go back to it.
Yes, yeah, they've ditched the space stuff pretty much entirely at this point. It sort of ended the last season with a dire warning that the nuclear reactors are starting to melt down across the globe. So that's the main threat, is nature itself at this point and whether they can all kind of bandy together to stop this nuclear reactor breaking down and wiping them all out within 6 months. So it's a fun show, though. I really enjoy it. Yeah, that's back on E4 on, I can't remember which night it is, Wednesday nights, I think. So that's back on E4 anyway, so you can go watch that. So yeah, I think that's it for the stuff for this week. Let's move on to some film and TV news. So film and TV news this week, we've got a couple of renews, or a few different renewals. Colony has been picked up for a third season. Did you see any of the first season of this? We've not even had the second one over here yet.
I do feel like already this episode, mostly everything I've said is negative, and I feel like sorry for that, but I watched the first episode and felt like it was just a standard drama with a sci-fi backdrop. Did that change as the series went on?
I have to say, I only made it about halfway through that first season. So, and I do want to go back and watch the rest of it, but I don't know. I think it probably did. It's closer to something like V, maybe, which I thought was quite a good series. But I don't think we ever actually saw the aliens themselves, the alien kind of overlords. We're only seeing this kind of occupation side of things. So I need to go back and watch the rest of the first season of that.
I think it depends if they broaden it out a bit, because the thing with V is that they showed you both sides and there was interesting politics on both sides.
Yeah.
And then Colony looked like it was just going to be centered around the humans and family life, and you could almost switch that backdrop out for some other post-apocalyptic or controlling event.
Yeah, you could have. I mean, it was basically the idea of a sort of Nazi occupation or an occupied country, but with aliens. Was the basic premise of it. So I know exactly what you mean. I will go back and watch the rest of the first season, hopefully before the second season lands over here, which we still don't have an exact date for yet, other than we know it is coming at some point to Sky One, and I would think it would be in the next couple of months. Colony, I think season two has finished airing in the US, so I suspect they were waiting for that to finish before they brought it over. Criminal Minds has been renewed for a 13th season, which was one of the ones that was left off the massive CBS renewal list a couple of weeks ago, whenever that was. And Netflix have renewed a show called Mindhunter, which you won't have seen because it's not aired yet. it's sort of Criminal Minds crossed with Silence of the Lambs. It's two FBI behavioral science unit people who are interviewing serial killers to solve crimes. It stars Jonathan Groff, who was in Glee and voiced one of the characters in Frozen, Hulk McNary, who was in Blue Bloods and CSI Miami, and Anna Tove, who was in Fringe, are the main stars. But it's produced by David Fincher, who's the man behind Gone Girl and Social Network. And it's not due actually to air. It's a Netflix original series, not due to air until October, and they've already renewed it for a second season. So I think that's definitely going to be one to keep an eye out for.
Could be quite interesting. I do like things that actually delve into the psychology of stuff. So if they take it on that angle and they do actually look into things in depth, then that could be quite an interesting one to probably have on, like, when you're eating dinner or something, because I'm assuming it's going to be a procedural.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how procedural it's going to be, given, I mean, it's very difficult to tell with Netflix shows, and there isn't that much out about it right now. So what interests me is the fact that it's got David Fincher behind it, which, you know, he likes his psychological bordering on horror thrillers. So I think that's going to be quite an interesting show, but that doesn't arrive until October, but they've already renewed it for a second season, so...
Chasing one particular killer in a kind of Red John style, that could be quite fun.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it is going to be procedural or whether it's one person, but it's called Mindhunter. I think it's based on a book as well, so I think it's based on an actual factual book of sort of FBI and serial killers, so it could be very interesting. That's going to be one to look out for. But Mindhunter, October, that arrives, and then there'll be another season after that. Onto the main news stories. We have another Marvel series incoming, but this one's kind of different because it's a live-action comedy series. It's coming to Freeform in the US, with obviously no UK channel or air date yet. Do you know the Marvel's New Warriors? I don't know this book, really.
Not incredibly well, but I am intrigued to see if Marvel can get the style of comedy they've got going on in the movies and that kind of universe onto their TV format. Because if we could get something that had the sense of self-aware human of Guardians of the Galaxy and get that sense of humor into a TV show, that could be amazing.
Yeah, that could be really interesting. The basis of it is it consists of a team of teenage / young adults, the six of them. They live and they work together. They've got powers and abilities that are on the opposite end of the spectrum to the Avengers. New Warriors want to make a difference in the world, even if the world isn't ready. Not quite super, not yet heroes, is the tagline they seem to be using. It's about the time in your life when you first enter adulthood and feel like you can do everything and nothing all at once, except in this world, bad guys can be as terrifying as bad dates. One of the characters is Squirrel Girl, who is a sort of a you kind of Rocket Raccoon sort of idea, I guess. Apart from, I think it's a girl that has the powers of a squirrel, so she actually looks like a girl with squirrel ears, from what I can tell.
And a tail,
yes. So she's described as an empowering fangirl, tough, optimistic, and a natural leader. He's confident and has the powers of a squirrel. She's acrobatic, can fight and talk to other squirrels. Her most important trait is that she has faith in people and teaches them to believe in themselves. So it looks like they're going to be kind of hanging around her as the main team lead. They've not announced who the others of the New Warriors are going to be, but it's quite interesting they're doing a straight up superhero live action comedy, I think.
Well, Squirrel Girl in herself is a little bit of a joke character because she was sort of a bit ridiculous, and then to somehow combat that they made her one of the most powerful mutants and take on some unbelievably strong bad guys and win. And she gets a bit of a mixed reaction from the comic book community. Some people absolutely love her and other people just think, oh, make it stop. I think this could go one of two ways. Either it could be incredibly funny in a Guardians of the Galaxy way, but whenever anything mentions like being scared of going on bad date, I start to get kind of Smallville flashbacks.
Yeah. I mean, they're not doing it as an hour long. They're only kind of 10, 30 minute episodes at the moment. So they are doing it very much as a half hour comedy. So I don't know. I mean, I know what you're saying about if they can do something like Guardians of the Galaxy. I get the feeling they're heading more into sitcom territory, which slightly worries me.
Knowing who's writing and directing this one is going to have a big impact on whether or not I watch it.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. So it's one to watch out for anyway. It's Marvel's New Warriors is the name of that show. Moving on, we have another piece of news on Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams, which was we spoke about last time, actually, you were on. They've announced some more casting for it. The next episode that's being shot will star Jack Rayner, who's from Macbeth and Free Fire and the Jungle Book, and Benedict Wong, who is, of course, from Doctor Strange and The Martian, and was in Top Boy. They both take the lead in an episode called Impossible Planet as two disillusioned, disenchanted and indifferent space tourist employees take up an elderly woman who's played by Geraldine Chapman from Monsters Call and Doctor Zhivago. They take up her request for a trip back to Earth, the existence of which is a long debunked myth. I find that's kind of an interesting setup. She's apparently easily confused, but she's rich, so for the right payment, what's the harm in indulging her fantasies? As the journey unfolds, however, their scam begins to eat away at them. Ultimately, they find themselves dealt a bittersweet surprise. Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know the story it's based off, but it is based off a Philip K. Dick short story. I quite like this idea. It's quite a nice one, I thought.
I love all of Philip K. Dick short stories. I think that this is, I said last time, this is exactly the right format for showcasing all of his short stories because they have some of his best ideas and people normally try and drag them out into whole movie formats.
Yeah, yeah.
And doing them episodic in the Black Mirror style is going to make these little pockets of hopefully complete genius, and I'm incredibly looking forward to this. This is probably one of the things I'm most excited about at the moment.
Yeah, it does look really, really good. This one has been written and directed by David Farr, who is one of the guys behind the Night Manager, Hanarum Mafia. It's based on the Impossible Planet Philip K. Dick short story. The show will be going out later in the year on Channel 4 in the UK and Amazon Prime in the US. So definitely one to watch out for that. I think it's shaping up to be a very interesting series, this. You've got Timothy Spall in the first episode as well, which looked like quite a good one too. So next up, we have a new drama coming to BBC Two called Collateral. And they've announced that it's starring Carey Mulligan, but you've also got Billy Piper, John Sim, and Nicola Walker joining the cast for that as well. Set over the course of 4 days, it's a four-part drama exploring the spiralling repercussions surrounding the fatal shooting of a pizza delivery man. Refusing to accept this is a random, senseless act of violence, tough and single-minded detective Inspector Kip Gillespie, who played by Mulligan, is determined to discover there is a darker truth. John Sim plays politician David Mars, who becomes instantly embroiled in the drama through his turbulent relationship with his troubled, unpredictable ex, Karen, who is played by Billy Piper. And Nicola Walker is playing Jane Oliver, who is a compassionate vicar who struggles to conceal her affair with the only witness to the crime. Yeah, interesting group of... it sounds very much like a sort of standard BBC drama to me, but interesting cast lineup they've got there.
Yeah, slightly outside of my area, but I do like a lot of the people involved in this.
I'm sort of with you there as well. The writing for this comes from David Hare, who has done various things in the past. He's actually well known as a playwright, did The Hours for TV, did The Reader. He's done various other things as well. So, he's a reasonable guy to have behind it. I think Carey Mulligan is a great actress. You've got Nicola Walker, who's fantastic. John Sim is also really good. It's always nice to see Billy Piper and things. So, I think it's a good, solid cast behind it. It's difficult because the story itself doesn't massively excite me. But I think the cast and the person behind it will probably make me go and watch it, I think.
Yeah. I think because it's just the four episodes and they've been very clear in describing it as contemporary state of the nation thriller and that, I think that it sort of sounds like the plot on it when you just write it out straight doesn't actually describe what it's going to be very well.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because it does sound fairly generic, but we'll see. Coming to BBC Two... It's 4 60-minute episodes. We don't know exactly when yet. It's co-produced by a company called The Forge and Netflix. So I imagine worldwide distribution is probably going out on Netflix if that's the case.
Also means they might be willing to take more risks with it.
Yeah, possibly. If it's a BBC
show. Need to see more information about that one.
Yeah, if it's a BBC Two show, then they might push the boat out a little bit more as well. And sticking with John Sim as well, there was the other little story that popped up at the end of last week. John Sim is returning as the Master on Doctor Who as well. He posted a thing saying, "I can confirm it's true, coveted Sim. Thanks to the power of time travel, I'm back. It's always a pleasure to work with a great team and people. I can't wait to see what the Master gets up to in the next series." So the next series will have the Master and will have Missy in it as well.
I am quite excited about that. I started to get a bit bored with Doctor Who. I felt that it was becoming quite predictable in places and I was starting to just not be as bothered with if I saw the episodes as they came out or watched them on catch up and things like that. And the idea of having both Masters in it, if it isn't just one episode, if it's an actual proper ongoing plot line with both of them, because they're both incredible actors, I think that could pull me back into Doctor Who again.
Yeah, I mean it looks like they're going to be both on screen at the same time. It looks like it's going to be some sort of two Masters team up, like a sort of two Doctors thing, but it's going to be two Masters instead, which is interesting because it's not something they've ever done before. It's not something they've ever really had the opportunity to do before, I don't think, because every time the Master has been on screen in the old series, I think every time they replaced the Master was generally because the previous guy had died off. So,
Yeah, they also go on a lot about the paradoxes of meeting yourself and how you never should. And the Master's already done something with a massive paradox type machine. So they're going to need to come up with something slightly different than, oh, he's just doing that again.
Yeah.
But if they're going to run this over, rather than it just being a one episode gimmick, if they're going to run this over a longer amount of episodes, I think that just could be incredibly entertaining to watch.
Yeah, and of course we have got a regeneration coming up. So, you know, maybe the fact that there are two masters that he's battling, maybe that has something to do with the regeneration, possibly.
Oh, is the master going to win for once?
maybe he is. I don't know. But I think that's going to be kind of interesting, and it's going to be good to see John Sim and Michelle Gomez on screen together. I think that's going to be interesting, and how they react to each other, because how's the master going to react to, first of all, the fact that he regenerated into a woman, and the fact that he has an enormous ego as well. So you've now got two people with giant egos clashing.
Will they compete with each other, or will they both just agree that they're both the most beautiful of their gender in the entire galaxy?
Maybe, I don't know. So yeah, that's seeing like a solo personality clash is going to be quite interesting.
Yeah, well, if you've seen, you remember the episode of Red Dwarf where there's two Rimmers?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Maybe that'll be interesting. And two Rimmers, though, we've had that before. So we've actually had the male and female Lister thing happen as well in Red Dwarf. So
yeah.
Stealing ideas
maybe
from Red Dwarf again.
A bit of that. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all the news for this week. Let's move on to the interview. The interview this week is with the composer Alec Pureau. Alec is an award-winning film and television composer who created music for over 40 films. He's done thousands of hours of television programs, countless advertising. He's probably best known for scoring the hit drama The Fosters and MTV's Sweet Vicious, as well as several films including The Art of Getting By with Emma Roberts and Freddie Highmore. He's a veteran of the indie film world and recently composed the music for the upcoming comedy All Nighter, which stars Emile Hirsch and the Academy Award winner and new Commissioner Gordon, J.K. Simmons. So we got a chance to sit down and have a chat with Alec about the upcoming film, stuff that he's worked on in the past, and various things that he's got coming up as well. So here's the interview with Alec. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. Hi, Alec.
Hey, how you doing? Is this David?
Yes, it's Dave. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for inviting me to sit in on your podcast.
No, you're most welcome. Thank you for spending a bit of time to come on and talk.
Yeah, definitely.
Probably should start off by, for those that don't know you, because you were in a band called Deadzy originally.
Yes.
So do you just want to give us a bit of background about how you got into music in the first place?
Sure. I started playing music when I started out on piano when I was about 10 years old, and, you know, liked the piano, but, you know, when you're, you know, young, you want to be in a rock band and you want to, you know, play music. And somehow from playing piano, I really had this interest in playing drums. And when I was about 13, I started playing drums. And, you know, from there, it was just like, you know, jamming every day in multiple bands with friends. And, you know, it was just the best thing ever.
Yeah.
And, you know, along the way, like in my teen years, obviously, like most drummers or musicians, you're in literally like five different bands. You're playing all the time and you're just trying to like master your craft. And, you know, I did a lot of, you know, I was lucky. I did a lot of like studio sessions, played drums on tons of TV commercials and some film stuff and with some other artists. And, you know, my friend Elijah, who was the singer in Deadzy, we were in seventh grade together. So we kind of started playing around the same time. And we had always said, oh, we're going to have this super group one day, or, you know, and, you know, in our late teens, like right before I went to college, we made a demo and it was just me and him. You know, I played drums, he played everything else, you know, we wrote stuff together and we put together this 4-song demo, and it caught the ear of Seymour Stein at Sire Records, who, I mean, Seymour Stein has signed, you know, he discovered Depeche Mode, Madonna, The Cure, wow, like, you know, just legend. And he signed us to a record deal. And kind of from there, it took a number of years to kind of actually finish the first record. And we kind of bounced from different record label to record label and ended up on DreamWorks Records in 2002. and released like our official first record, Commencement. And that was kind of the tail end of bands, you know, sort of selling records, I guess, or there being like record stores. So, you know, we were lucky. We got a lot of our friends were in, you know, bigger bands like, you know, Korn or Limp Bizkit or Orgy or whatever. So we got to go on all these big like arena tours, which was just such a fun experience. And in doing that, we were selling, you know, a decent amount of records, probably sold a few hundred thousand records in all. Mm. And, you know, had a fun, I feel like we got to do the whole, you know, rock star experience or whatnot and tour everywhere, minus, you know, making that crazy living that some of these guys do.
Yeah.
But, as, the band went on, I kind of, you know, I knew that unless the band was going to be Coldplay or Nine Inch Nails or something that was, you know, just would take over your life forever, I always knew that I wanted to kind of score films and TV shows. And, you know, luckily along the way, you know, when I went to college before we got our record deal, I went to this place, California Institute of the Arts,
right,
and studied like orchestration theory, really got back to the kind of piano and writing element and composing. And from there, I started scoring friends' short films as we were touring and licensing music. And it kind of, I don't know, it kind of worked hand in hand, because, you know, when you're in a band, it's like you're on tour and then you're not, and then you make a record. There is a lot of downtime.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was able to kind of explore that early on, so that as time went on, you know, we made a second record and toured it. The scoring thing just kind of started to outweigh the band thing. And, you know, in your 20s, it's really, really fun to, you know, have that experience and be out on the road and have no responsibility and all that. But, you know, as you know, once you get in your 30s, if you want to get married or have a family or just, you know, things sort of change priority wise. And, you know, that's why I loved composing, because it was like there weren't five other people you would have to kind of coordinate things with. Or it was really, you know, started with you, and then collaborating with other people is amazing. But, you know, I was able to kind of like stay in one place, and I don't know, one thing led to another, and I scored a buddy's film, and it was kind of the first, I guess, bigger film that I'd scored. First time I got to do an orchestra, and it went to Sundance and was my first sort of taste of like, oh God, this is totally what I want to do with the rest of my life. This is awesome. So I guess that's sort of the long-winded beginning to start.
So I guess if you've been doing sort of small films throughout while you were in the band, that must have made the transition from being a rock musician into being a full-blown screen composer a lot easier.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 100%. Because, I mean, it's one thing to be able to write a song. It's a whole other skill set to be able to look at picture and put music to it and then be able to revise that per somebody's notes. You know, the thing about scoring that's different from, you know, writing a song or making a record in a band is like when you're scoring, you kind of, you're given these sort of parameters and you're kind of, you know, in a box. In a way, and you try to figure out how to make the director's vision sort of come through on screen, given like these parameters and you know, what you have to work within, which I find a really fun challenge because you come up with different stuff every time. The cool thing about being in a band is there's no rules, nothing's off limits. you can take it wherever you want, which is really exciting as well. So it's just a different skill set, I think. So, you know, like anything, you got to just kind of do it over and over and over and over again to get better.
Over the years, you've scored various different TV shows. The Fosters, you're quite well known for, Sweet Vicious, Wicked Tuna, Manhattan Love Story, I noticed as well on your list. There's quite a wide variety of TV shows there. Do you have a particular, and movies as well, do you have a particular genre that you prefer to score for?
I don't know. I mean, I like to mix it up, like the shows you mentioned, you know, one's like a family drama, one's a half hour single cam comedy, one's an unscripted kind of docu-series. I don't know. I mean, I've always gravitated more towards darker, more aggressive, dramatic type stuff, but I also really love scoring comedy too, because it's a whole different challenge, you know?
Yeah.
I just feel like the way any business works is it's super competitive. And it's like, if you get the opportunity to make music or score somebody's project, no matter what it is, I mean, unless it's really goes against everything you're about, it's like you say yes to everything because, you know, you want to work.
Yeah.
You want to work and exercise that muscle, and you never know who you'll meet along the way or what relationship will lead to what. And I don't know, that's kind of part of the fun of it. So that's why, you know, my, I guess, credits or resume is kind of all over the place in a way. You know, I haven't yet been super pigeonholed to like, I mean, there's definitely certain things that I get asked to do a lot, but I like being able to mix it up, and it all depends on, you know, what the director or showrunner really wants from you.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a go-to instrument to start on a project? Because, you know, we've established you can play drums and piano. Drums, I can't imagine being a great place to start when you're...
No.
So do you have anything in particular that you... Is it piano that you usually start with or something else?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, usually it kind of, you know, over the years, I've kind of learned, like, even if I'm writing, you know, I play a little guitar as well, but
yeah.
If I'm per se, you know, writing something for guitar or for an orchestra or just a different instrument, my first concern is finding, you know, the right composition and coming up with the right themes that really kind of elevate what's on screen. And to me, that all starts, or for me, that all starts on the piano.
Right.
And I won't move to even filling out a demo or whatever until my composition and my map, everything is complete just on the piano. Because once you write the piece, it's all there. And it's, how are you going to make this come to life? Like, what's the sound palette for this project that you're going to use? Is it guitar? Is it flute? It could be anything. But if you don't have the composition and the melodic themes, you don't really have anything. So
yeah,
I really like to start with that. And then that becomes the foundation. And then it's a lot of fun from there to kind of fill it out. And drums, you know, come into effect after you write the piece. Even though there were a couple pieces, this movie that I just scored called The All Nighter.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the soundtrack, I believe, is coming out tomorrow, as well as it's going to be on VOD tomorrow. But in that movie, which I haven't gotten the opportunity to do a lot, it was super percussive based, which was so cool because there was actually, there was two cues in there that literally are drum cues.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, which is really cool. So I got to kind of start out that way, which was just a whole fun, different way to do it.
Yeah, I was going to come on to the film. You've got J.K. Simmons and Emil Hirsch are the two leads in it. It's kind of an action comedy, I guess. So, yeah, that it looks like a great, great fun movie. I love J.K. He's amazing,
awesome.
Amazing at everything. One of the things that comes out in the trailer, which I was watching earlier, is Emil's character mentions he plays the banjo. So does that sort of influence the score in some way?
You know, when I first sat down with the director, that was definitely one of the first things we talked about, because there's a couple instances where Emil plays banjo on screen.
Right.
And at the end of the film, you see him on stage, like, jamming with his band. So originally we were like, let's start with these pre-records, see how that goes. Cause the director, he was kind of on the fence if he wanted to, cause once you put banjo into like a score or something, it becomes very like bluegrass heavy in a way. And I don't know that he really wanted to do that. He wanted to go more with the score kind of, you know, almost like those throwbacks, sort of like Lethal Weapon, you know, Midnight Run, 48 Hours type of kind of buddy action thriller score that has that sort of like bluesy yet driven, really pace driven kind of score.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we did do some pre-records, you know, where I wrote some banjo pieces, and at the same time they had gotten Emil like a banjo teacher, cause he had to kind of learn. And as he was learning to play banjo, he got so into it that he started writing songs with his banjo teacher. And at the end of the day, he was just like, you know, check out this song I wrote for the end of the movie. And they ended up using that instead of one of my pre-records. But it came out really good. He got really good at banjos. And I think he wrote maybe 10 songs or something. I mean, only ones in the movie, but yeah, it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's it's amazing somebody picks it up that quick. That's brilliant.
Yeah, no, because that's a hard instrument.
Yeah. With you coming from, I mean, you've done various shows, you've done films as well before. Do you have a preference for film or TV, or is it just a mix again?
I mean, it's kind of a mix. I mean, there's things I like about both. You know, I started out doing lots of, you know, independent films, lots of Sundance movies. And, you know, the thing I love about film is you have a little bit more time usually. And most directors really want to push it and really try to find just something new and cool. And you have a little bit more time to experiment. And the thing I love about TV is I actually really love the fast pace, where you don't have too much time to kind of stew and think about it and overthink about things. So it's really nice to kind of like come up with, you know, something cool and different and push myself artistically, obviously, but in that smaller amount of time. So it's nice to kind of do some TV, and then you get to do a film where you get to kind of like breathe a little bit more. I feel like music and film is a little more melodic at times, because in TV it's, you know, it's such a short period that a show is on, and it's just so fast paced, and there's a lot of underscore, and I don't know, it's just a different thing. But I mean, I really do love both for sure.
Yeah. What do you reckon is the most interesting experience you've had whilst been working as a composer?
Huh, let's see. I mean, there's a few. I definitely, a couple years ago, I got a call to come in and score a film with Linkin Park, the band.
Oh, wow.
Linkin Park.
Yeah,
which was really cool, because I'd never done something like that. Basically, you know, we had toured with them back in the day, and I became friends with a couple of the guys and, you know, kept in touch. And one of them called and was like, hey, you know, we're trying to score this movie, and it's just overwhelming. I mean, it's just so different than making a record. Is there any way you could like come in and, you know, kind of walk us through the process, you know, be a part of it, help us out? And I was like, yeah, that would be awesome. Like, such a cool way to like mix it up and do something different. And it was an awesome experience to get to kind of like write with those guys and, you know, really collaborate and kind of feel that band vibe again, you know?
That's very cool.
Yeah. So,
do you listen to the music on other sort of films and TV shows? What are other sort of shows and soundtracks that you've listened to and thought, I really love that?
I mean, right now, I think there's a few, but the one that stood out recently for me that I was just like, oh my God, this guy is just a monster, is Westworld.
Yeah.
The composer for Westworld, you know, Ramin, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but he scores like Game of Thrones. And I mean, he is just unbelievable. The theme to that show is just awesome.
Yeah.
And just, you know, just the detail that goes into that show for the, you know, kind of what happens in Westworld and the stuff that happens in the present. I don't know. It was just so creative. He's definitely one of my favorite TV guys for sure.
Yeah, Ramin is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's crazy.
One of the few guys I've not managed to get onto interview yet, but I would love to.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I know, I'd really love to, because I love his stuff. It's fantastic. What would you say inspires you in terms of other musical influences, other, you know, the not guys directly you like? Is there sort of musical or even non-musical influences that inspire you?
I mean, to me, honestly, anybody that does something well and really puts the time in inspires me. But I mean, you know, obviously, you know, filmmaking and TV, that, you know, especially now with TV, you know, the TV has become more like films, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just feel like when you watch something that's just so well thought out and so well written, that definitely inspires me, as does, you know, going to a concert to see. We go every year to the Hollywood Bowl out here to see, you know, John Williams play right. all of his famous scores. I mean, I just feel like, yeah, music as a whole, I mean, there's so many things that can get you going and inspire you. And I just feel like constantly trying to learn and study, it's like you can never sort of, for me at least, you know, I'll go through periods where I'm not maybe learning something new or sitting at the piano even for 10, 20, 30 minutes a day just to practice things. And I feel myself kind of, you start to write some of the same things, and that's when, you know, you got to go back, learn new things, which just completely inspire me and bring kind of new ideas to the table.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you say is the best piece of advice somebody's given you?
Huh. I mean, I definitely have been lucky in that, you know, I grew up in Los Angeles, and
yeah,
I think when you grow up here, you know, I had a lot of contact with different people in my given industry or whatnot, and was lucky. You know, there were definitely a handful of people that I feel in some way, not mentored me, but really gave me good advice along the way. But I guess the one that really sticks out for me, and not to drop names, but my mom, when we were growing up, she was a real estate agent. She became really close with Andy Summers from The Police.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And his family, and he lived up the street, and we were friends with his kids. And I remember one time I was talking to him, and this is when I was like really into the drums and being in a band. And
yeah,
he, you know, we were talking about music and obviously The Police and whatnot. And he was just like, listen, the only advice that I could give you is you need to start writing songs.
Yeah.
That is the key. You need to write music that for the creative outlet, but that you own, that's yours, that, you know, when you play drums or you're a studio guy, it's like, you're going to be, hopefully your band blows up or whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, if I had just kind of stuck with the drums, I'm sure I would have been, you know, a really successful session guy, or I would have maybe joined some band as a hired gun and be on the road. And like, that's totally cool. But I don't know that would be for me as much, you know. And also the creative outlet of writing a song or composing a score, it just, I don't know, I feel like that stuff's got to get out of you. And so once he told me that, it is when I really kind of started like writing songs and really entertaining the scoring thing in a big way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very true, I think. And plus, you know, if you're in a band, you want to be on the songwriting credits because they get you more money. So
yeah, that too, right? Totally. No, it's true.
When you're writing, do you tend to go for physical instruments more than anything else? I mean, we've talked about you using the piano, but do you tend to use physical instruments over samplers and that sort of thing?
Yes. I mean, 100%. I mean, my mission ever since I started was, I mean, the first thing I did was learn how to record myself. And right. I think that, you know, for me, obviously it depends what kind of score you're doing. Like the score I do for Sweet Vicious is, you know, they don't want organic sounds. They want like trap step, hip hop, program drums. Like they want that. So it's totally different. But overall, my whole thing is I want my scores and the music I make to be as organic as possible and as human as possible. Because if you're playing drums, bass, guitar, piano on a track, and then there's a couple instruments that are maybe like sampled instruments peppered in, they don't stand out, because for the most part, you feel that, you know, heartbeat and that soul from the human kind of making music, which I think is just so important. You know, I the imperfectness of that, I've really just embraced, you know, more and more every day. I love when there's a little flub, or, you know, it shouldn't be quantized to the grid. I just I mean, some things again that it works for, but I like the human aspect of music most of all.
Interesting. I spoke to Nate Barr a couple of days ago, who writes for The Americans and did True Blood as well and various other
things. He's awesome.
Amazing composer. And he said very similar sort of things about the fact that the nice thing about the physical instruments are the fact that, you know, when something goes wrong, you get that kind of real human quality to it, which is far nicer, and can send you off in a completely different direction when you're writing as well, which is kind of interesting.
No, totally. And especially when you have, you know, when you write something and you have other musicians come in, I mean, they, you know, a lot of times once we get what I've written, I'll be like, hey, you want to do a pass, just free form, like whatever you think. And sometimes I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I can't believe that guy just did that. I wouldn't have ever thought of that. So Yeah, no, it's definitely, that's the fun in it. You know, making music is supposed to be fun, and we're lucky to get to do it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. A few last questions. We've established you just finished doing the all-nighter. What are you doing next?
Film-wise, I just finished a film called A Happening of Monumental Proportions. And you know the actress Judy Greer?
Right, yeah.
She directed this film. It was her first, it's her directorial debut. And she just made an awesome film. And the cast is just ridiculous. I mean, everybody you can think of is in this movie. And it's, you know, we just finished it. So hoping probably come out in the next year, but I got to try some new things, which was cool. I did, she was really into the Beach Boys. So oh, wow. I did this kind of like acoustic indie-esque score, but you know, for the first time, a lot of the cues have like vocals, like four-part harmonies. And
oh, wow.
It was different. It was really fun to kind of have the license to just kind of go for it with that.
That's very cool.
So that, and as far as TV, you know, hoping Sweet Vicious comes back for a second season, and, you know, working on some pilots right now. It's pilot season.
Yeah.
And, you know, just always trying to put as much out there as possible, because yeah, you just never know what comes back.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
A couple of very final questions that we sure always ask people. First one would be, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Let's see. I'm watching right now, like last night, I really like Homeland.
Yes.
Watch Homeland, Better Call Saul.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big Breaking Bad fan.
Yeah.
Westworld. Wait, there's something else. You know, I love The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Even though sometimes I'm like, why am I watching the same? It's kind of, but I there's something about it. I love watching it. And God, what else? Those are kind of the main ones to, like, right now, as far as
yeah
where seasons are at. Those are my shows at the moment. Obviously, my wife likes the occasional Real Housewives marathon, which I'm subjected to, but no, just kidding. Yeah.
Oh, dear. And last question would be, if you had the opportunity to work on any show, past, present, or future, which show would it be?
God, that is a tough question. I mean, the first one that always comes to mind is Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
I really think that, you know, I guess maybe like Breaking Bad and Lost, maybe.
Oh, cool.
Lost. Yeah. But Breaking Bad, I don't know. It's just literally, I think, one of just the most well-made, best shows. It's definitely top 10 of all time for me. And you know, that series finale, I think, was one of the best series finales I've ever seen.
So, oh yeah. Yeah.
I guess I would say that. Yeah. I really, that show is amazing.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've been on half an hour, so I shall let you get back to your date. Thank you for spending a bit of time just talking through your work.
No, this was awesome. It was actually the first podcast I've done. It was nice to, you know, just have a conversation with somebody rather than do like a formal interview. It's definitely much more fun.
Awesome. Thanks for coming. You take care. And you. Cheers.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
That was the interview with Alec. Hope you enjoyed that. Next up, we have some highlights for next week on TV. Highlights for next week on TV. First one is a fairly big one. Better Call Saul is back on Netflix on the 11th of April. I adore this series. It was fantastic last season. It was fantastic the first season. So it's back for its third one. I'm really looking forward to this.
I'm still behind. But you keep talking very subtly about he might just slightly like this one. So I'm going to take it as something I should have seen.
Yes, it is definitely something you should have seen. We get to see a lot of new characters or new old characters in this season, because we've got people like Gus Fring coming back from Breaking Bad. It also apparently going to have the transformation from the lawyer that he currently is into the alter ego Saul Goodman, which is the one that we know from Breaking Bad. So that apparently happens this season as well. Other new big dramas, we've got Guerrilla starting on Sky Atlantic, which is a co-production between Sky Atlantic and Showtime. It features Idris Elba, who's one of the people exec producing it, and he's one of the side characters as well. He's not actually the main lead, I don't think. But it's set around the radical underground cells in 1970s London. That looks like it could be quite a strong and powerful drama. That coming on the 13th of April at 9 p.m. on Sky Atlantic. It's called Guerrilla. Next up, we have Baskets, which is arriving on the 13th of April at 10:30. This has been a show which has got huge acclaim in America. It's actually won various awards. Zach Galifianakis playing twin brothers Chip and Dale Baskets. Chip dreams of becoming a professional clown, but fails clown school in Paris and ends up heading back to his hometown of Bakersfield, California. I don't know much more about it than that, but I think it's on its second or third season in the US, and a lot of the critics have been going nuts over it, so I think it will be one to watch.
It sounds terrible from that description. However, it's winning awards, so I'm sort of morbidly curious to understand what the hell that is.
Yes, I'm sort of in the same boat with you. But yes, it's called Baskets. It's coming to Fox, and it's on the 13th of April at 10:30, if you want to catch that. Blind Spot Season 2, Part 2, is back on the 13th of April at 9 p.m. as well, if you've been following Blind Spot. Then you've got Mystery Science Theatre 3000, The Return. This is coming to Netflix on the 14th of April. One Man, Three Bots, a vault of B-grade movies just begging to be rifled. Welcome to the all-new era of Mystery Science Theatre 3000.
Oh, yeah. fond memories of the original. I never wanted it to go away. I'm glad it's back.
I don't know whether I ever saw the original, but I do like the sound of this. This sounds very much up my street, so I will be looking forward to going to watch this. 14th of April on Netflix, that one is. The aforementioned Doctor Who is back on the 15th. That's on BBC One. It's Peter Capaldi and Stephen Moffat's final full season. They're both around till the Christmas special, as far as we're aware, although some people are saying that there may be some sort of regeneration stuff going on early, although Moffat has then said Capaldi is definitely in the Christmas special, so I don't know what the heck's going on. But they're supposedly both around till the Christmas special, and then Chris Chibnall takes over for next year with a brand new Doctor and a new season. Looking forward to this, because I want to see the final season of Peter Capaldi. And as we've been talking about Two Masters, what more can you want? Doctor Who Season 10 comes to BBC One on the 15th of April at 7:20, that is. Vikings, if you've missed it on Amazon Prime, is coming to the History Channel for the fourth season on 18th of April at 10 p.m. And Veep is back for its sixth season on the 18th of April at 10 past 10 on Sky Atlantic, which is a show I absolutely love. Really depends whether you like political comedies, but that one is particularly funny. So unless you've got anything else you'd like to add in?
Not unless you want another 3 hours worth of ranting about Ghost in the Shell, but I think people can just go to the Tristabytes YouTube if they want to see me looking very disappointed about having spent a couple of hours with Scarlett Johansson, which is not something I ever thought I'd say.
Yeah, I could never imagine that. So that's all for us for this week. If you want more information, you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see all the latest air date information. You can get in touch with your questions and comments by emailing us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. You can leave a message on the website post. You can find us at Geektown on Twitter, Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, at YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.